Hello, and welcome to episode 45 of the Clippings Podcast, where we review nail papers and share them with you. I'm April Schechtel, and I'm joined today by my co-host.
Hi, April. I'm Dr. Jasmine Rana. Thanks for having me back. And last time, you asked me a question about why I got interested in nail dermatology, and I think the listeners would love to hear from you to hear more about your journey into nails.
Thanks so much for asking, Jasmine. So my path to nails was a little bit meandering. I am a dermatologist at the University of Washington here in Seattle, and I first did an internal medicine residency after medical school and then a dermatology residency. And even at the end of my dermatology residency, I hadn't decided if I would have a particular niche or interest, and I was doing mostly general dermatology. And as that time went on, somewhat similarly to you, I was very influenced by a wonderful mentor of mine, Phil Fleckman, who was running a nail clinic. And I thought he would be somewhat close to retirement in the next couple of years. And I could see that this was going to be a huge hole in nail care in our area. And I was asking him so many questions all the time. And he helped me do a nail biopsy or two. And I thought, oh, wow, I had seen some of this in residency, but I thought, oh, okay, I could be doing this on my own as an attending too. And I really want to take this opportunity to soak up as much as I can from him in terms of his knowledge so that I can kind of carry that on. And so it worked out really well that I was able to start my own nail clinic in 2020. And for a time, we ran those nail clinics side by side. It was so fun. He would be having his nail clinic going, and I'd have mine, and we'd have residents, and we would pull each other in to see interesting things in each other's clinics and help each other out. And I learned a lot, and it was a really great way to have this really hands-on mentorship to get my clinic running, and I'm so grateful to him for how much I learned. And unfortunately, he passed away last year. So now I'm the person running the nail clinic, and I'm just grateful to him all the time for helping me start with that and trying to kind of carry on in his image of high quality nail care in our area. And I've enjoyed it quite a lot, and I am learning something new every single week in my nail clinic. So I think it's a really fun thing to do.
I love that. And I think just to call out how important mentorship is and continues to be for both of us. And, this podcast is such a beautiful example of this because I think, for me, when I, was a listener of this podcast early on, learned so much as well. So it's a wonderful thing to do. So thanks for sharing.
Thanks, Jasmine. Well, I brought an article today I wanted to speak about. It's titled Tangential Biopsy of the Nail Matrix and Bed with Plate Evaluation for Diagnosis of Lichen Planus. It's in the Journal of European Academy of Dermatology and Venereology, published hot off the press September 2024. The authors are L. Bertanha and colleagues, with the senior author of M. Sintra, and paper comes from Brazil. The authors describe the presentation of nail lichen planus and discuss how the currently used biopsy methods have some drawbacks. So, the lateral longitudinal excision is the classic biopsy technique in which the nail matrix, bed, and proximal nail fold are all sampled so that the dermatopathologist can visualize the whole nail unit. It has the downside of permanently narrowing the nail unit and can lead to malalignment and requires specialized skill to perform. Punch biopsy is an easier alternative, but it has a much smaller specimen that the pathologist gets, and in my experience, that can lead to missing key findings. So the tangential biopsy technique is commonly used to biopsy the nail matrix for melanonychia, and these authors propose that it could have some value in the diagnosis of nail lichen planus and psoriasis, which are both conditions in which the pathologic findings are fairly superficial. So, to review, those path findings of nail LP are lichenoid lymphoid infiltrate in the matrix in the bed, sawtoothed acanthosis in the bed, nail bed hyperkeratosis, hypergranulosis, and increased eosinophilia of keratinocytes. Other findings include focal perikeratosis and serous exudate, and a frayed or ragged nail plate has been described. All of these findings are in the superficial dermis or epithelium or the overlying plate. So the authors describe a 60-year-old man with progressive nail changes, including several absent fingernails, as well as onycholysis and onychorhexis on the left index finger. So they note that the nail bed and matrix are both involved. To get a diagnosis, they carefully detached the nail plate using a 15-blade scalpel and clipped it off proximally. Then they performed a tangential excision, leading to a specimen that was 6 by 5 millimeters wide and long and 1 millimeter deep, covering the bed and matrix regions. They then sent both the plate and the shaved specimen to pathology, where histopathology revealed colloid bodies in the nail plate, which was previously undescribed. And there was compact hyperkeratosis, a thickened granular layer, and the lichenoid lymphoid infiltrate with cytoid bodies in the basal layer in both the nail bed and matrix portions of the specimen. So a diagnosis of nail lichen planus was confirmed. The authors conclude that tangential biopsy may be sufficient for diagnosing nail lichen planus. And they also highlight this finding of the cytoid bodies within the nail plate that hadn't been reported before, and pointing out that maybe sending some clippings can help for the diagnosis of nail lichen planus too. I like this idea because I think the recovery and the scarring are more appealing than the lateral longitudinal biopsy. And I think it really comes down to the healing. I think there would be still some risk of like a splitting or very thin nail plate in this area because of the amount of matrix that is removed. So, personally, I would want to see the follow-up after healing to form more of an opinion about this technique, but I'm definitely interested in it and think it could be a easier way for patient recovery perspective for diagnosing nail lichen planus.
Yeah, that's a super interesting article. I agree that, follow-up is super important. And my instinct is, because lichen planus can cause pterygium, it would be really important to, use a faux nail or to put back the nail plate and the proximal nail fold. That would be my intuition, but certainly would, want to make sure it heals well for the patients.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I suppose it depends on how much of the nail plate. If you leave some that's right under the proximal nail fold, then maybe that's less of a concern. But you really want to make sure that you get probably some matrix if it's matrix involved. So kind of a delicate balance, I think, to walk there.
For sure. And I think, I would also add that, if a tangential biopsy is not in one's repertoire, doing like a distal punch of the nail bed and the nail matrix kind of right at that lenula area that's visible is totally reasonable. Like 3 millimeters or less, I've had success with really good healing. And, depth-wise, the go as superficial as you can, but knowing that it's a narrow sample will help, and also the distal matrix.
Totally. Yeah. I agree. Okay, Jasmine, what article did you bring today?
Yes, so I brought in an article titled Botulinum Toxin Injection Shows Promise in Nail Psoriasis, a Comparative Randomized Controlled Trial. This was by doctors and forgive my pronunciation, Doctors Juntong Jin, Sri Simlapakig, and Doctors Nitya Vardhana, all in the Department of Dermatology at Thammasat University in Thailand. So I am really excited to share this article because this was actually sent to me by one of my patients who was weary of receiving serial intralesional steroid injections for nail psoriasis and was super excited about this possibility, which is suggested in the article of non-inferiority of a one-time botulinum toxin injection for treatment of nail psoriasis. So, kind of as some quick background before we get into the nitty-gritty of the study, I think many of us know that botulinum toxin is not, of course, first-line therapy for nail psoriasis. We primarily consider this an inflammatory disease state, right? And so we generally target it with anti-inflammatory therapies, topical steroids, intralesional steroids, biologics that target the interleukins involved in psoriasis, such as IL-23, IL-17. And so, it is a very interesting thought to use botulinum toxin. And the authors talk a little bit about kind of why they did this study. So, I learned that there were actually case reports both for skin psoriasis and nail psoriasis showing kind of one-off success with the injection of botulinum toxin and improving the disease. And the hypothesis is that there might be some neurogenic inflammation, which is related to elevated levels of neuropeptides and nerve fibers. So things like calcitonin gene-related peptide and substance P that may indirectly also modulate the interleukin pathway that we are more familiar with in psoriasis. So that's kind of the background for why this study was done. And I would say, kind of as a side note, nail psoriasis is probably the most common inflammatory disorder that I see in my nail clinic. And so this is, super relevant for a lot of our patients that we see. And it'll affect almost all adult patients with psoriasis at some point. So, super relevant for this group. So this study was a randomized control trial and it was blinded. It had 16 patients with a total of 64 clinically diagnosed psoriatic nails who successfully completed the trial. It was 24 weeks long. There were two patients who dropped out, but that left 16 patients. And these patients were divided into four treatment groups. And each treatment group was the four nails per patient. So it was an intra-individual study, kind of akin to like a split, face trial or split hand trial. And so these four groups were one time ABO botulinum toxin A injection, 7.5 units. The second group was two serial intralesional triamcinolone injections, 10 milligrams per milliliter, separated by 2 months. The third group was a topical calcipotriene betamethasone daily application. And the fourth group was no treatment. So each patient had one nail that was treated with each of these treatments. The patients themselves were pretty evenly matched. And I would say that the mean psoriasis area and severity index, so PASI score, was in the mild to moderate range of 4.7. And the mean nail psoriasis severity index score, also known as the NAPSI score, was 7.7. And if we recall, kind of the max per nail is around 8. So, I would say kind of, pretty evident clinical nail psoriasis of these patients. The inclusion criteria was having at least four effective nails, of course, with a minimum NAPSI score of 3. And there was no mention of systemic treatment. So, presumably, none of these patients were on systemic therapies. And if they were on topical treatments, they had to stop them for at least 2 weeks before starting this study. And I'll just make a note of their injection technique. So it's not super clear, how many injections were made at the nail bed versus the nail matrix, but they wrote right, and I'll just kind of quote them here. So they were injected using the modified De Burgers technique. The number of injection sites, quote, varied depending on where psoriasis was located. Intradermal injections were performed, two sites on the proximal nail fold for matrix involvement, and or two sites on the nail bed for nail bed lesions. And I will also add, they don't talk about this in the discussion, but it's kind of notable. They did end up using a digital nerve block with 2% net lidocaine and topical 5% lidocaine prilocaine anesthetic cream as well. So, okay, so what did they find? So, interestingly, the NAPSI score, which is used to quantify the degree of nail psoriasis, gradually decreased as expected for all treatments versus placebo, and the most improvement was with injections. So, with regard to overall NAPSI score, there was no significant difference between either the steroid or the botulinum injection at any time point. Interestingly, they also analyzed nail bed NAPSI score specifically. So if we recall, the NAPSI score takes into account the nail bed findings, such as oil spots, hyperkeratosis. It also takes into account nail matrix findings, such as pitting, for example. And when they looked just at the nail bed NAPSI score specifically, they saw a divergence of results at week 24. So specifically, the NAPSI score of the nail bed was decreased by 40% by week 16, and at 24 weeks, 60% for the botulinum injection group, whereas it remained at 40% for the triamcinolone injected group. And this was statistically significant. So They hypothesize, authors, that this is due to perhaps the longer acting nature of botulinum toxin and possibly might reflect the fact that there is more nerve endings in the nail bed versus the nail matrix. So my takeaway from this study is, of course, it is limited by a small sample size and we need more data. And I wouldn't be so far as to say that Botox is superior to first-line intralesional steroid injections, but rather, it certainly is a demonstration of non-inferiority, and I definitely think deserves more study. I think a couple of practical things. So there was no increased pain or adverse side effects as related relative to steroid injections for the botulinum toxin. One unexplored area is cost. So I do know that botulinum toxin is really hard to get approved for non-FDA approved indications. I would be really interested to see if there is more data and just, clinically might be relevant for patients with hyperhidrosis. So that is an FDA approved indication for botulinum toxin. We do know that nail psoriasis can be very reasonable in my mind if someone has, inverse psoriasis or kind of hyperhidrosis of their palms. Maybe, this could be a treatment that could potentially treat both disease states. So that would be a patient population that I would be interested in learning more about. I wasn't clear if a nerve block, so they use a lidocaine nerve block, would impact the results. So there wasn't a separate treatment group just looking at lidocaine only injection. So we don't really know if that played a role. So that's just something I'll put out there. In my practice, I typically don't do a nerve block. I find that tachycardia and refrigerant sprays are usually enough. So just as a practical point, I, don't typically do that. And I think that's pretty much it from kind of the study, but super interesting. And I'm not ready to kind of use it as prime time for myself now, but I'm so excited to see where this research grows because if it, could be a one-time injection that lasts up to 24 weeks, that's pretty powerful instead of having patients come back every 1 to 2 months for steroid injections.
Yeah, I totally agree. I want to congratulate the authors and thank them for having really put this together with, the four different arms and evaluator blinded. I think it's awesome to have studies like this so we can really compare the different new and standard of care techniques. My practical thinking on it is that, right, I think the cost is really going to make it something that doesn't compete well with triamcinolone injections, at least at the beginning, unless Botox becomes a lot cheaper. Even when you're thinking about, okay, you have to do 6 visits for triamcinolone injections, from the system's perspective, it's just triamcinolone so much cheaper, and you're going to have it already sitting in your clinic. Some people's practice might be different. In our clinic, folks have been pretty able to actually get Botox for Raynaud's or like scleroderma and ulcers, that kind of thing. That seems to be pretty available, but it is something that you have to have ordered in advance and not something where you meet the patient that day and you just grab it out. So that would be a logistical issue for us. And I do, like you, I do nail matrix injections without doing a nerve block. I think the tachycardia and so on works really well, ethyl chloride spray and firm pressure vibration. But I have not done nail bed injections with that, I think, due to the concern about pain. So I suppose if I were trying to do that, I would also maybe do a nerve block. Maybe there's a role for someone who really likes injected treatment, but has had some concern about steroid atrophy or is stalling out with their triamcinolone. It's good to know about what those options might be.
Definitely. And, in seeing a lot of side effects from cancer therapies, particularly some patients are on combination chemotherapy that can affect sweat glands, but also immune therapy that can cause psoriasis. And so my mind jumps to, well, that could be a really great solution because maybe the botulinum toxin would reduce the toxicity of the chemo in that site, but also the psoriasiform changes as well. So really interesting. And I'm really excited to see where the research goes from here.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thanks, Jasmine, for joining me on this episode of Clippings. Thanks to our listeners for their attention. Please share this podcast with your colleagues and trainees and let us know how we're doing, if there are articles you'd like us to review on the show, You can contact kristen.cnd@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at Nail Disorders. The goal of the Clippings podcast is educational and informational in intent and is not a substitute or resource for formal medical advice. Listeners should not delay formal medical care for any condition or medical question that they have. These views are solely those of the discussants, and use of any content is at the user's own risk.